Our next case this morning is number 033785, Incredible Technologies et al. Against Virtual Tech Incorporated.
Schneider. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Robert Schneider, and I represent the plaintiff, Incredible Technologies. On this appeal of the District Court's denial of IT's request for a preliminary injunction. This case is different than most copyright cases because it is undisputed that the defendant copied the plaintiff's video game. The only thing this court has to decide is whether or not that copying amounts to an infringement. Incredible Technologies is the creator of an immensely successful coin-operated video game known as Golden Tee. The original game was first introduced in 1989, and subsequent improvements were made in new releases in 1995 and 2000. IT obtained copyright registrations for these and subsequent versions that were published in 2001, 2002. And all of the copyright registrations are being infringed by the defendants with their version that was a clone of IT's game.
Excuse me for one moment, Mr. Schneider. Mr. Fleming, can you see the what's being showed to the court? If you, it certainly will be, or if you'd like to move your chair up, you may. I'm sorry, sir. Please proceed.
No problem. And I was just saying that the court below found that all of IT's copyrights in its golf video game were valid. Now, there were many video games for playing simulated golf produced within the last 15 years, but none of them have captured the imagination and loyal following of players as has Golden Tee. The evidence showed that Golden Tee is the most popular game since Pac-Man and is regularly played by millions of video golfers. These video golfers can even compete with one another in tournaments, which are regularly conducted by IT, connecting many machines together over the Internet. The president of the defendant, Global VR, was aware of the immense popularity of Golden Tee and believed that its success was due to the excellent gameplay and control panel graphics. He believed that the only way Global VR could effectively compete was to essentially make a clone of IT's video game. The court below found that to this end, Global VR obtained a Golden Tee game and instructed its designers and programmers to create a game by copying as closely as possible every expression from Golden Tee so that the millions of existing Golden Tee players could play the PGA Tour game with no learning curve. We are here today because that is exactly what Global VR did. Incredible Technologies charged Global VR with infringement of its copyrights and its trade dress in the unique appearance of the Golden Tee cabinet. The copyright aspect of the claims involved two major components: the instructional expressions on the control panel for the game and the graphic display on the video screen during the play of the game. I have here on this easel the actual control panels from the games PX3A and PX3B. These were also on page 41 of the short appendix.
The control panel at the top is from Golden Tee, the original game. The control panel on the bottom is from the defendant's game, PGA Tour.
Four other actual video games were reviewed by the district court during the preliminary injunction hearing. They're also shown in the appendix as PX. Plaintiff's exhibits 4, 5, 6, and 7. The control panel on the top, as I explained, is from the plaintiff's game, and the one on the bottom is from the defendant's. The expressions on the control panel instruct the player how to operate the game. The remarkable resemblance between the two is obvious. The control panel from the other four games, they're also shown as plaintiff's exhibit 18A through D, look nothing like Golden Tee. All of the evidence at the hearing showed that the text and graphics on the Golden Tee control panel were original, and that those on the PGA Tour, the one on the bottom, were copied from Golden Tee. As such, all of the button placements, all of the graphics, and all of the text were copied verbatim from the Golden Tee control panel to PGA Tour on Global VR's control panel. For example,
text describing how you operate the trackball system is described in the lower right-hand corner on Golden Tee. That fence is copied verbatim in the lower right-hand corner on the global VR control panel. The 9 segments at the top, which explain how the golf ball will simulate the flight path, is copied exactly on the same place, the same location, with the exact same combination of graphics and text and words, the letters A, B, and C. If you notice, the arrows around the trackball are designated A, B, and C across the bottom, and 1, 2 across the top on both of those control panels. The arrows to the right and left have the same text, tooth club to the right and left. This is what has been copied precisely so that Golden Tee players can go over and play a PGA Tour game with no confusion, no learning curve. To them, it's the same.
You claim a copyright in what?
Copyright in the total overall appearance of this control panel. All of these graphics and all of this text were copied almost verbatim. Now, it's not identical. We admit that this is a derivative work. But everything on here came from here, and there's very little variance between the two. The warning label, for example, is almost verbatim copied from Golden Tee. There's even a little copyright track, which is to say, lost ball, loose ball on here, because the PGA Tour used to have bolts on top of the control panel that could become loose. The PGA Tour was never published with any bolts on it. Yet, their warning label also says loose bolts, because it's a virtual identical copy of the warning label up above. That text, these graphics across the top that are copied, this text down here, and the arrangement and alignment of arrows and the choice of arrows and the choice of words to describe how you play the game and how you instruct the player to play the game is what was copied and what we contend is covered by our copyright.
There's different ways to play the game of golf.
Many different ways to play golf, yes.
Really? That you don't just get up there with the club and whack at the ball? I mean, there's a sneaky way of doing it that I've missed.
Well, not. I guess I was answering your question. There are different levels of skill in
golf. There's no different way of instructing somebody how to play golf.
Oh, there are a million different ways as to how you bring the club back, high or low, how you hold your hands, how you swing the club, how you follow through. There would be many different ways to instruct a player or teach a player how to play the real game of golf.
Is that right, Judge Evans?
Well, last time I played, that was correct, yes.
Okay. The
PGA game, you know, we talk about confusion in that. The PGA game has designated regular golf courses to play. I mean, that seems to me to be a huge difference here. You know, if you want to play Pinehurst or Augusta National or Pebble Beach or something, you use the PGA game. If you just want to play a generic golf course, you play the other game.
You're absolutely correct.
And the PGA game is named players, Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson.
Absolutely. And as we indicate in our brief, all of those things that you're talking about and referring to are what are known as scenes of fair in the game of golf. We claim no infringement of the golf courses and the golf course players that are in the background of all the screens that you see on the display during the play of the game.
But isn't that something that would motivate someone to play one game over another?
It might
be more important than where the trackball is and that sort of thing.
No, I don't think that would be correct because there were other games before, like the Sega golf game, that had a trackball that played exactly like the Golden Tee game, and they didn't copy any of the graphics on the control panel, and they didn't copy any of the graphics that were original to the Golden Tee game. You've kind of jumped ahead a little bit, referring to what I have here. This is an enlargement of the two video screens at one stage in the game when you're going to tee off at the beginning of the game. What you were referring to, this background information in both of these, is scenes of fair. Anybody can have a golf course, anybody can have golfers' images, whether they be named or not. It's true that the Golden Tee golf course is our fancy pool, and the PGA Tour games do come from real golf courses. But we pay no claims to infringement in that respect, because that seems unfair. We can't protect ideas.
Well, but I go back to Judge Bauer's question about how you make a backswing and how you follow through. I mean, there's only, it seems to be a very limited range of differences of opinion on how you would do that if you're making a game.
Well, the court below actually interrogated the witnesses itself on that particular issue and found that what was shown in the Golden Tee game was not any attempt to simulate the way real golf strokes are taken. In fact, the letter designations were created back in 1989 when no video golf game had any successful trackball usage where you had a backswing and a foreswing to hit the ball. This is the first one that allowed you to have a backswing and to choose the combination. So that what I talked about first was the copying on the control panel and the original expressions, which are undisputed. There was never a control panel like this before. With respect to the game, as I said, the things of fair portion, the golf courses are not protected by copyright. We never claimed they were. What we claim is that these informational icons around the periphery of each one of the screens is what.
Mr. Schneider, I'm becoming concerned that the tape may not be picking up a great deal of your oral argument, and many times the judges like to listen to that in deciding the case, so you may want to say a bit more in the area of that microphone.
Okay, let me just move this over then.
Whoops.
That didn't work. Hold these
up. Four. Can I ask you a question about the other one from Owen Place?
Sure.
I'm worried about to what degree that is subject to copyright. Could you copyright the design of a dashboard on a motor vehicle?
You could copyright the text and graphics on the dashboard of a motor vehicle, yes.
Text and graphics.
The text and graphic representations that are laying flat on the control panel, that's certainly copyrightable if it meets the originality requirement. Of course, that's the sine qua non test, that it has to be original. You have to be the first to create it. So if you just made a speedometer with 1 to 100 on it, that's not going to be original. Everything you see on that control panel on the top is original. Everything in the one below was derived from that one on
would
the top.
Would you agree that this basically performs the same function in your game as a dashboard does on a motor vehicle?
I wouldn't say function exactly, because this combines a lot of various instructions. These are instructions how to play the game. If you opened up the manual from General Motors that told you how to shift your car and how to drive your car, that's what these are analogous to, the instructions how to drive your car. That book is certainly, the manual is certainly copyrightable.
And let me just get back to my point on the informational icons around here. These elements on the periphery are what we claim was original. These were never on any video game before, and although they represent what the lower court found to be elements that are typically disclosed in video golf games, what he didn't do was look at the exact expression to determine whether or not the expression was something that had been copied. For example, this is the lower right-hand corner of each one of these scenes. This is an overview of the course where you can see where the golf ball is going to go once you hit it on the video screen. The idea, the concept of having an overview is common to video golf games. A lot of video golf games had that, but none had this exact expression before Golden Tee, and none even copied it except for PGA Tour. And what I mean by particular fanciful expression, as this court described in the Atari case, it's got a blue outline around the course. It's got a lower box outlined again in blue with numerals that appear in it when you drive the golf ball. These numerals increment to show how far your golf ball goes down the course. And at the top, it shows the slope of the green so that as you're approaching the green, you might decide to hit on one side or the other to try to make it easier to putt. All of those features were not ever in any other video game before. Their original expressions to Golden Tee, and they were copied, as you can see, the blue outline here, the blue box at the bottom. And ironically, Slope of the Green was not on the PGA Tour copy when the game was first released. But players of the Golden Tee game complained to them. They said, we need to know what the Slope of the Green is. So they added software code that would add the word Slope of Green up there to show exactly where you're going. And it makes it very easy now for players to play one or the other because the expressions have been copied virtually identical.
The lower court below found that the Golden Tee control panel could not have any copyright protection because it was the best explanation of how to explain the game.
You know, you're in your rebuttal time. I just thought I'd let you
know. I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
No, you don't be sorry. I just let you know. That's courtesy.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. And the best explanation rule is unknown in any circuit, and it would result in illogical situations that the best textbook, for example, for explaining physics would not be copyrightable. That, of course, we think is a rule that should not be adopted by this court, and I'll save the rest of my time now for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schneider. We hold now from Mr. Flanagan.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Mark Flanagan. I represent Virtual Technologies on this appeal, which goes by the name of Global VR, so I may refer to them as Global VR by accident while I'm speaking here. Your Honors, as you know, this is an appeal from the denial of a motion for preliminary injunction last August. And Incredible Technologies is now coming to the court claiming that it needs an injunction to be imposed right now by this court because it is suffering irreparable harm. Now, in this case, Incredible Technologies is seeking copyright and trade rights protection over the idea of a very specific type of video arcade golf game and the process of making that type of game work, which in this context, arcade-type video games necessarily includes both the physical structure of the game and the means for instructing players how to play the game as they walk up to this cabinet that's sitting in a bar or in a video arcade emporium. And it's the collision between Incredible Technologies' copyright claims on the one hand and the legal doctrines that limit the scope of copyright protection, the sens a faire doctrine, the useful article exception, the method of operation exception, that led the district court to conclude, after taking 6 days of testimony, reviewing the physical evidence, and actually playing the games, to conclude that Incredible Technologies had no chance of success on the merits.
His Honor got off the bench and played the games?
He did.
Splendid.
We had some demonstrations during the hearing itself, but by agreement of the parties, we actually left the games, perhaps at the insistence of the law clerks, I'm not sure. We left them in the courtroom. And the court had an opportunity to play them thereafter while he was deliberating.
In recess, he did. To South Bend and to Milwaukee and to.
He didn't have a group of visitors to watch him or anything. Nobody saw him do this. He just kind of.
That's correct.
He's a very clever fellow.
The district court found that. It reached its conclusion not only because of the significant differences that it actually found between the games, but also because the similarities that do exist between the games flow from their common use of this specific type of video golf game. And I'd like to very briefly describe how this game works because I think it's important to understand how these accused elements tie into the method of operating this type of video golf game.
Before you get there, you agree that the Golden Tee game has been very, very successful.
Yes, I do.
And a lot of people play it.
Yes.
And part of the idea of designing the PGA game as it is designed was so that someone who has played Golden Tee quite often would find it easy to play this game.
That's right.
PGA game. You don't dispute that.
I do not dispute that.
Okay.
We, in fact, we embraced the notion that Global VR took the method of operating a video golf game, a way of emulating an actual video, an actual golf shot, use that method that Golden Tee was using. And it is that tie that was to bring consumers who are using the Golden Tee game to using the Global VR game, the PGA Tour game, as opposed to what the appearance was. One of the reasons I think it's important to appreciate at least the basics of how these games operate is that it shows that any comparisons between these other with these other video golf games, like the Sega game that's referred to in the brief, and other games, is really irrelevant because those games operate in a different manner, and so it would stand to reason that their control panels, for example, and their instructions on how to play the game would differ from Golden Tee's and the PGA Tour game as well. So in both the Golden Tee and the
PGA... How can they operate in a different manner? Could you expand on that just a little bit?
Yes. The Sega game, for example... Well, the Birdie King game was one of the games that was described. It was, I think, the first golf game to use a trackball. In the Birdie King game, you simply push the trackball. It's a small trackball. You push it forward in whatever direction you want the ball to fly. And it's just this one forward motion. I think there was another game called Virtua Golf, I believe, which had a spring-loaded lever. So there was no trackball whatsoever. Sega Golf, I suppose, was the closest because it did have a trackball, but the physics of the direction in which you would pull the ball back and then push it forward and what the resulting shot would be were entirely different from both Golden Tee and PGA Tour. So it's the same in the sense that it's a video golf game that uses a trackball, but it works differently. So you could not be someone who's knowledgeable, for example, about playing Golden Tee, use that bank of knowledge that you have about how to play it, simply walk up to a Sega game and do the same motion and achieve the same shot. You're not going to. It just works differently. So in the Golden Tee and the PGA Tour games, the player uses this trackball that's in the middle of the control panel to simulate a golf swing, namely by pulling back on the trackball to emulate a backswing, then pushing the trackball forward to emulate the upswing and follow through. Now, one can vary the flight of the ball by doing different combinations of the angles by which you pull back or push forward. So, for example, if you pull the trackball back towards the left, then push it straight forward, you're going to hit what they call, what PGA Tour calls a fade shot, which is kind of a nice way of saying a slice. If you, for example, pull to the left and then push forward to the left, you're going to get a more dramatic fade or slice. And the various combinations result in differing shot shapes, if you will, as shown on the PGA Tour control panel. Both Golden Tee and PGA Tour operate in this manner, as I said, to create a virtual golf shot on the video screen. And it does appear that Golden Tee was the first video golf game to operate in this manner. And it may well be that had ICE Incredible Technologies applied for a patent on a method for creating a virtual golf shot or a device that implements this type of golf shot, it might have been eligible for a patent on that process or device. But they didn't, and what they cannot do is now turn that innovation, if that's what it was, into a copyright. And the reason they can't is because there are a number of very practical and specific consequences that flow from using this type of method for creating a virtual golf shot. Now, just very briefly, while there are functional reasons for the similarities between the games, which I'm going to go into in some detail, it's also significant that the district court found that there were many important aesthetic differences between the games, from the appearance of the cabinet to the control panel graphics to the in-game graphics, to the point where the district court concluded that it would be difficult, if not impossible, for a player to confuse the PGA Tour game with the Golden Tee game. That's at page 7 of the memorandum opinion. And that's obviously relevant to the copyright and trade dress claims. And I would just like to correct counsel. I'm sure he misspoke, but when he was speaking in terms of verbatim, I think he misspoke in terms of whether the instructions on the respective control panels are, in fact, word for word verbatim, because they're not. And the evidence showed, incidentally, that at the hearing that Global VR and its licensing partner, Electronic Arts, went to pains to differentiate the PGA Tour game from the Golden Tee game, using the substantial goodwill of PGA Tour, of Electronic Arts, EA Sports, and using different color combinations, different cabinet and control panel graphics, and so forth. Now, there are three distinct parts of the PGA Tour and Golden Tee games, I think. The cabinet, control panel, and the on-screen gameplay. And as the district court found, each one of those constituent elements implicates one or more of the three doctrines that I mentioned earlier. First, with regard to the cabinet, that, of course, houses the video monitor, the computing unit, speakers, and the controls. And that probably presents the most straightforward case, both under copyright and under trade dress. With respect to trade dress, briefly, the district court simply found as a factual matter that they just didn't appear similar. With regard to copyright, the cabinet is undeniably a useful article and therefore ineligible for protection under Section 101, except in to the extent that any of its so-called expressive elements can be separated from the useful article without compromising its utility. And the district court found that there are some distinctive portions of the cabinet that can be so separated, namely the logo and the marquee. However, the PGA Tour games' logos and marquees don't look anything like Golden Tees, and so for that reason, as a factual matter, the copyright claim as to the cabinet fails. The control panel presents, frankly, a confluence of several of these statutory and case law limitations to copyrightability. First, like the cabinet, it is a useful article in that it is the means by which one operates the game. That includes not only the trackball and the buttons, but also the instructions that tell one how to play the game effectively and safely. Since the control panel clearly isn't a useful article, the only question is whether the supposedly expressive elements of the control panel, the graphics, are separable from the utilitarian aspects of the control panel as required by Section 101. I would posit that under this court's recent decision in the Pivot Point case, the controls and instructions are not conceptually separable from the utilitarian aspects of the control panel. The test that this court articulated was whether the artistic aspects of the article can be conceptualized as existing independently of their utilitarian function, which is informed by whether the design elements reflect artistic judgments exercised independently of functional influences. And the answer here is no. In fact, Golden Tee's creator, who testified at the hearing, testified that the graphics fundamentally tell you how to go about using the trackball and how to execute a golf swing. So it expresses to the player the fundamentals about how to go about taking a shot. So, you know, they use the words expressiveness because those seem to be touchstones for copyright law, but what in fact you have here are instructions on how to play the game. Instructions as to how to function, and they're in that regard, they are intertwined with the method of operating this particular type of game.
Didn't need the same shaped arrows, did you? Got basically the same shaped arrows.
Well, I'm not sure if they're the same shape. They're all arrows. That is absolutely correct. And
if this were a dashboard on a motor vehicle, I'd say they're two Buick dashboards. One's a 95, one's a 96. Buick dashboard. That frankly is my problem with your case.
Well, I think that there's a difference between, well, in this area of functionality, I don't think that that one can obtain copyright protection simply because there are different ways of carrying out the function. In other words, simply because there are a number of combinations of words that one can use in the instructions to tell one how to play does not render their choice of those words non-functional. they are still related to and intertwined with the functional aspect of this product. And whether or not you can drop the article A or use the word the or not, or whether you want to have arrows in the same color or different colors, or whether you want to have some different type of mechanism that instructs one how to do it, is not the point as far as this Section 101 inquiry goes. The question is whether these features are related to, are inextricably entwined with, whether they are conceptually inseparable from the functioning of the product that they are serving. And that's the case with regard to everything on those control panels except for things like the words golden tea. And we don't have that. We have PGA Tour all over there, real courses, real golf, real players. I would suggest that, and this is a difficult area of law in terms of how one draws lines and its conceptual separability stops. But I would suggest that this control panel is unlike the mannequin face in the Pivot Point case, where one can find some artistic expression in, I think it was called the Hungry model, runway model look. In fact, the evidence in that case showed that it was first made as a sculpture and then implemented as a mannequin. So there's something separate conceptually, if you will, with that. The belt buckles in the Kieselstein case, which were objects of art that were implemented as belt buckles. This is more like the VCR buttons referred to in the Lotus v. Borland case, where the court said it's irrelevant whether you could choose to move the fast forward button to the left or to the right and put it in a different arrangement than the ones that we see on all VCRs. What's relevant is whether those things are entwined with the functioning of the underlying product. If they are, it doesn't matter whether someone emulates the way that you've done it. It doesn't matter if there are different ways of doing it. This control panel, you know, the other dividing line in terms of shibboleths that courts come up with is whether the item in question is protectable applied art or whether it is non-copyrightable industrial design. And I would suggest to this court that these control panels are non-copyrightable industrial designs. I started talking about the Lotus v. Borland case, and that gets us into another reason why the control panel copyright claim fails, which is that the control panel, just like the computer program commands and drop-down menus in the Lotus case, which had to do with the Lotus 1-2-3 spreadsheet, and they refer to the VCR controls, these things are integral to the method of operating this game. The control panel, including the graphics that instruct the player how to play, how to make a shot, constitute an intrinsic part of this method of operating the game, this specific type of game, where you pull back the trackball in a particular direction and it has certain implications, and you push it forward in a particular way and it has a particular set of implications. These are integral to how one operates this type of unpatented game. And as I said, Lotus also teaches that the fact that you can express it in a different way, I can use dots instead of arrows, is beside the point because you're outside the protection of the copyright laws to begin with under either the useful article exception or the method of operation exception. And finally, and I'll touch on this very briefly, there's also a line of cases which we cited in our brief which have strictly limited copyrightability with regard to short descriptions of products and explanatory instructions. And these were the Alberto Culber and Publications International and Landsberg cases, which recognize that instructions like this simply don't have the sort of artistic dimension that that's going to be recognized by the copyright laws. And finally, on the control panel issue, you can look with your own eyes, but you can see that there are, to be sure, stylistic differences between these games, and to the point where This was one element of where the district court said that a player walking up to one game would not be confused that he's playing the other game. Let me finally touch on the visual display or in-game play. First, just to be clear, it is undisputed that the source code that generates the video images is entirely different in these two cases, and it's not being accused here. The court recognized the courses, the golf courses are all different. The PGA Tour game offers a unique opportunity to play real courses like Pebble Beach, to play as a real player, like Vijay Singh. I don't think we were able to afford Tiger Woods, but we have some others. And the similarities that exist between the two sets of...
Tiger Woods has his own golf game.
Excuse me?
Maybe it's not a video. It's a video game, but not a coin-operated game.
That's right. There is a Tiger Woods PC game.
Sports.
That's right. He is licensed with EA Sports, but that's on the video, the home version and the Sony PlayStation version. The similarities that exist with regard to what a player looks at as you're looking at the screen relate to basically these information icons that provide standard golf play or video game play information. This is where the sens affaire doctrine goes a little bit further than my colleague would suggest. The district court found that each one of those elements, overhead maps, wind meters, course information, what hole you're on, how long it is, what its par is, what stroke you're on, how far you are from the goal, are all intrinsic to both, to either, well, those are all intrinsic to the play of golf, period. And there is evidence to that effect. With regard to the overhead map, for example, we had entered into evidence a scorecard from a local course that shows overhead maps of all the courses. Other information displayed on these information icons is intrinsic to the other discipline that's involved here, which is video games in general. Things like you hit a great shot, things like whose turn it is, things like how many games you have remaining. That sort of information, which again is intrinsic to the depiction of video games in general, and therefore sens affaire.
I think, speaking of directions.
I think my light is on, I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Flanagan. How much time does Mr. Snyder have? 4 minutes, sir.
Thank you very much. Well, we've narrowed some of the issues clearly. The district court below did not find that because of the Lotus Borland case, this was a method of operation. The district court found that the buttons and the trackball were the method of operation, and they could not be protected by copyright. We agreed from that for the beginning. We don't have a patent on that, and they can use the same system or method of making a video game, just like we did. And in fact, that's just what the Sega Virtual Golf did do. They had the same trackball system that you pulled forward and pulled backwards and pulled forward to make your tee shot. But their instructional graphics on their control panel, that's the Plaintiff's Exhibit 6, were totally different than what you see here. There were many games that played very similarly that were totally different. And remember, in copyright law, Mr. Flanagan pointed out logos and some minor discrepancies, but you don't consider what was not pirated, you look at what was copied. And the court asked a question specifically about the arrows. The arrows are not necessary. There are Exhibits 18E through 18L that show almost a dozen different variations that convey the same instructions.
When you want to indicate a direction to do something, what other than an arrow would come to mind as a good way to do that?
Yeah, if you look at Exhibits 18E through L, there are directions like on a compass, west, north, south. There are hash marks indicating various angles, 45 degrees. There are the numbers around a clock, for example. So there are an innumerable number of ways. If you look at the Sega game in particular, they had a different, completely different graphic than what is shown on these two control panels to explain how to execute a shot with the same, essentially the same system for making a golf shot on a video game. So, and in addition to that point, to follow up, even if you wanted to use arrows, You didn't have to use 1, 2, and 3. You didn't have to use A, B, and C. You could have used any kind of nomenclature if you wanted them. But no, they copied it identically. This is the expression of the idea. As Mr. Flanagan indicated.
If the red 1, 2, and 3 instead said left, center, and right, it'd still be arguing that it was...
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
If the PGA game, instead of the red numbers 1, 2, and 3 for the direction, said left, center, and right, you'd still be making the same argument, wouldn't you?
If that was the only change, but if they changed everything like that to eliminate any copied text, then there wouldn't be a copyright infringement. That's precisely the case. And the reason this isn't infringement is because all of the expressions were copied. And these expressions provide instructions as to how to use the system, how to use the method of operation, which Lotus says anybody can use the method of operation, but they have to do it in their own terms. Here, all of the plaintiff's terms were copied. Thank you.
Our thanks to both Mr. Schneider and Mr. Flanagan for their excellent briefs and oral argument today. The case will be taken under advisement.